Scripture reading this evening will be from the book of Esther, chapter 4. When Mordecai perceived all that was done, Mordecai rent his clothes and put on sackcloth with ashes, and went out into the midst of the city, and cried with a loud and a bitter cry, and came even before the king's gate, for none might enter into the king's gate clothed with sackcloth. And in every province, whithersoever the king's commandment and his decree came, there was great mourning among the Jews, and fasting, and weeping, and wailing, and many lay in sackcloth and ashes. So Esther maids and her chamberlain came and told it her. Then was the queen exceedingly grieved, and she sent raiment to clothe Mordecai and to take away his sackcloth from him, but he received it not. Then called Esther for Hadad, one of the king's chamberlains, whom he had appointed to attend upon her, and gave him a commandment to Mordecai, to know what it was and why it was. So Hadad went forth to Mordecai unto the street of the city, which was before the king's gate. And Mordecai told him of all that had happened unto him, and of the sum of the money that Haman had promised to pay to the king's treasuries for the Jews to be for the Jews to destroy them. Also he gave him the copy of the writing of the decree that was given at Shushan to destroy them, to show it unto Esther, and to declare it unto her, and to charge her that she should go in unto the king to make supplication unto him, and to make request before him for her people. And Hadad came and told Esther the words of Mordecai. Again Esther spake unto Hadad, and gave him commandment unto Mordecai. All the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces do know that whosoever, whether man or woman, shall come in to the king unto the inner court, who is not called, there is one law of his to put him to death, except such as to whom the king shall hold out this golden scepter, that he may live. But I have not been called to come in unto the king these 30 days. And they told to Mordecai Esther's words. Then Mordecai commanded to answer Esther, think not with thyself that thou shalt escape in the king's house more than all the Jews. For if thou altogether holdest thy peace at this time, then shall there enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place, but thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed. And who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this? Then Esther bade them to return unto Mordecai this answer, to go gather together all the Jews that are present at Shushan, and fast for me. Neither eat nor drink, 3 days, night or day. I also and my maidens will fast likewise. And so will I go in unto the king, which is not according to the law. And if I perish, I perish. So Mordecai went his way and did according to all that Esther had commanded him.
there's some discussion as to how to pronounce this king's name. Ahasuerus is one of the ways that some believe that the name should be pronounced, and that's the easiest for me, so that's how I'm going to pronounce his name. We might call him Xerxes, because that's what he's called according to the Greek language, but one of the things that we want to do in our study tonight is to tell the story of Esther, and then make some conclusions based upon what we read in this great book. This king had an empire that was composed of about 127 provinces, over which the Jews had been called to, had been scattered as a result of the Babylonian captivity. We see evidence of that in the second chapter, about verses 5 and 6. Haman was the king's right-hand man, or prime minister, in this story, and he's favored by the king that he had made a decree that all bow in obeisance when Haman passed by. And there's another character, Mordecai, who would not bow down. I want to pause just a minute. I told Richard that I'm very tempted to talk about the story of Esther without using any of the charts at all. You have them in front of you, and if our overhead goes down, we'll know why, but that won't be such a bad thing. But we want to notice in this passage that's on the board, verses 13 and 14, how that Mordecai understood that the people of Israel would be delivered, that is, those of the Jews in captivity would be delivered, and they would be delivered some way. But Mordecai asked Esther the question, "Who knoweth whether thou art not come to this kingdom for such a time as this?" Mordecai evidently believed in the providence of God. He knew that God could provide deliverance for his people, and that that might even be provided through Esther. But if not, he could provide deliverance through some means. I want to be reminded of a couple of passages. Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verse 1. "For all this I laid to my heart, even to explore all this, that the righteous and the wise and their works are in the hand of God." In our study this morning, we talked about how that God rules in the kingdoms of men. In this Old Testament book, we find also that all are in the hands of God. In Ecclesiastes chapter 3 and in verse 11, "Man cannot find out the work that God hath done from the beginning even unto the end." I don't have all the answers. The wisdom writer said, we don't have all the answers. It's not in man to see all of the great things that God has done and the way that God's providence operates in the affairs of men. But we must admit that God's providence does work in the affairs of men, as we noted this morning, as he uses kingdoms and nations of men to accomplish that. And in Deuteronomy chapter 29, verse 29, it answers a lot of questions. A lot of the questions that we just don't know the answers to. They're simply not revealed. We often refer to Deuteronomy 29, verse 29 to answer those. It says, "The secret things belong unto Jehovah our God, but the things that are revealed belong unto us and to our children forever, that we may do all the words of this law." And then Paul writes in 2 Corinthians 5, verse 7, that we walk by faith and not by sight. The wisdom writer declared in Proverbs chapter 3, verses 5 and 6, "Trust in the Lord with all thy heart, and lean not upon thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he will direct thy paths." Now, what are we learning in all of this? Well, we're simply reminded that we don't have all the answers. But even though we don't have all the answers, we can still walk by faith based on the answers that we do have. And we can trust in the Lord and lean upon him, and he will direct our paths. In other words, I don't have to understand everything about the providence of God in order to believe that it exists. I don't have to understand everything about the providence of God to walk on the basis of the things that he has made clearly known. I can know those things are right and walk upon the premise of faith because those things have indeed been revealed. Now, as we think about this king, we mentioned that his kingdom was made up of 127 provinces of Jews that were scattered as a result of the Babylonian captivity. He was currently reigning over the kingdom of Persia. In 483 B.C., a royal feast was given in Shushan that lasted 180 days. We see that in the beginning verses of the study of the book of Esther. There were women that were being entertained by Queen Vashti, and the king sought to parade Vashti's beauty after becoming merry with wine. I want to call your attention to verse 11. It says, "To bring Vashti the queen before the king with the crown royal, and to show the peoples and the princes her beauty, for she was fair to look upon. But the queen Vashti refused to come at the king's commandment by the chamberlains, Therefore was the king very wroth, and his anger burned within him. As we read concerning the queen refusing to come, the question is then asked at verse 15, what shall we do unto Queen Vashti according to the law, because she hath not done the bidding of the king Ahasuerus by the chamberlains? That's interesting to me, because some punishment seems to be being considered for Vashti, because she would not submit to the king and express her beauty unto all of the drunken people that the king was entertaining. Now that's interesting to me on another count as well. There are some who say, well, Vashti needed to be punished because, you see, the king, her husband, commanded her to do this. And because she was not in subjection unto her husband, the king, she deserved to be punished. I take issue with that. I believe that what the king was demanding her to do was something that was immoral. And so Vashti, even in the position that she was, would not display her beauty, ever what that consisted of. She would not display her beauty before a drunken crowd of men. And so she is to be commended, at least in my view, because she refused the king's order. But furthermore, we notice that this process of selecting a new queen after Vashti was removed from being queen took about 4 years. Eventually, Esther is chosen, and she does not reveal her background. In the second chapter of the book of Esther, it says at verse 10 that Esther had not made known her people nor her kindred, for Mordecai had charged her that she should not make it known. And we're going to talk about Mordecai and who he was in just a moment. But from a historical standpoint, we notice that each woman prepared for a year for this presentation before the king. And then each, strangely enough, spent one night with the king. And those not chosen were placed with the king's concubines. Now Mordecai, who was he? Mordecai served as the king's gatekeeper. Going back to chapter 2, reading beginning at verse 5, it says, there was a certain Jew in Shushan, the palace, whose name was Mordecai, the son of Jair. And as we read about him further in verse 7, that he brought up Hadassah, that is Esther, his uncle's daughter, for she had neither father nor mother, and the maiden was fair and beautiful. And when her father and mother were dead, Mordecai took her for his own daughter. This tells us about the relationship that Mordecai and Esther had. Some believe that he was a cousin, but moreover, most believe that he was the uncle of Esther. But as we relate to those things, we see that there is a plot that is revealed to the queen about an assassination attempt on the king. And when this was brought to the attention of Mordecai, Mordecai reveals the thing to Esther so that she can relate the thing to the king, and the king's life is spared. At verse 23 of chapter 2, it says, and when inquisition was made of the matter, and it was found to be so, they were both hanged on a tree, and it was written in the book of the Chronicles before the king. I simply want to call that to your attention so that you can remember that. We're going to come back to that in just a little bit. But as we talk about Mordecai, there was a certain man named Haman. We're going to talk about him in just a moment, and who he was and the role that he plays in this story. But Haman was an important man, and he had made a decree that folks who would see him pass would bow down before him. But according to verse 2 of chapter 3, Mordecai bowed not down, nor did him reverence. Then the king's servants that were in the king's gate said unto Mordecai, why transgressest thou the king's commandment? Now it came to pass, when they spake daily unto him, and he hearkened not unto them, that they told Haman to see whether Mordecai's matters would stand. For he had told them that he was a Jew. And when Haman saw that Mordecai bowed not down, nor did him reverence, then was Haman full of wrath. Now we're going to have to talk about Haman. Haman served as the king's prime minister in Esther chapter 3, verses 1 and 2, a very important man. And because Mordecai did not bow down to him, when it was found out that Mordecai was a Jew, Haman devises an evil plot to kill all of those who are Jews. In the third chapter, reading beginning at verse 5 once again, it says, and when Haman saw that Mordecai bowed not down, nor did him reverence, then was Haman full of wrath. But he thought scorn to lay hands on Mordecai alone, for they had made known to him the people of Mordecai. Wherefore Haman sought to destroy all the Jews that were throughout the whole kingdom of Ahasuerus, even the people of Mordecai. He's going to kill them all. Why? Because he doesn't like Mordecai. Mordecai won't bow down before him. And because Mordecai won't do that, he's just going to kill all of them. And that's his answer to the problem with Mordecai. However, we find that there is more to Mordecai than meets the eye. We find that the king devises a plan in accordance with the request of Haman that all of the Jews would indeed be killed. Look, if you will, beginning in the third chapter at verse 10. It says, "The king took his ring from his hand and gave it unto Haman, the son of Hamadithiah, the Agite, the Jews' enemy. And the king said unto Haman, the silver is given to thee, the people also, to do with them as it seemeth good to thee." You want to kill them? Here's the money to see to it that it's done. Whatever you want to do, then you do that to the Jews. So the king answers Haman's request by saying, just have at it. You want to kill the Jews? Here's the money. You just have at it. You pay whoever wants to go after the Jews, and they can kill them. Now, Esther has a decision to make, and what we're going to see is basically a four-step process that results in some very fascinating things in the book of Esther. We notice in the fourth chapter, as was read in your hearing just a few moments ago, that when Mordecai found out that this plot had been confirmed, that he sat down and rent his clothes and put on sackcloth with ashes, verse 1, and went into the midst of the city and cried with a loud and a bitter cry. You'll notice at verse 4 that Esther sends clothes to Mordecai, and Mordecai refuses those. And you'll notice further in the reading of this that Mordecai informs Esther of the decree of Haman. Evidently, Esther doesn't know about that just yet. And he beseeches Esther to go before the king on behalf of the people. And Esther is understanding that if I go before the king, if I even go to his inner court, and I haven't been sent for, then he may not lower the golden scepter to me, and that would mean even me, the queen, that I would be killed. Now, isn't that interesting? Even the queen could not approach the king unless she had been sent for. If so, she risked her life. Now, Esther has a choice to make. Mordecai presents before her in verse 13. Then Mordecai bade them return answer to Esther. Think not with thyself that thou shalt escape the king's house more than all the Jews. Now remember, Esther likewise was a Jew. She had just not yet made known unto the king that her family were Jews. Now Mordecai's question is a legitimate question. Do you think when you're found out who you are that you're going to escape any more than any other Jew? Now you think about that, Esther. You're going to be killed right along with everybody else just as soon as somebody finds out who you are. But furthermore, in verse 14, if thou altogether holdest thy peace at this time, then will relief and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place. Mordecai is confident that if Esther doesn't make request on behalf of the people, that some source will be provided for the deliverance of the Jews. Now, why do you suppose that's so? Mordecai is well aware of the things that God has promised. For example, if we go back to Genesis chapter 12 and notice in verses 1, 2, and 3, there God had promised of Abraham that he would make of him a great nation and that he would give to him a certain land. And more importantly, that in thy seed shall all families of the earth be blessed. What if all the Jews are destroyed during the days of Esther? You see, there wouldn't be anyone through whom the lineage of Christ would proceed. And so, the question is asked, or the statement is made, that relief or deliverance would arise from another source. Mordecai does not believe that all the Jews would be extinguished. But, the latter part of verse 14, but thou and thy father's house will perish, and who know whether thou art not come to the kingdom for such a time as this? You see, if deliverance is provided by another source, then you and your house are going to be gone because you're a Jew. You'll be destroyed right along with everybody else. So if you risk this, then you know that possibly through you, the people of the Jews might be spared. Now that's interesting to me because Mordecai raises the question, how do you know? How do you know that God has not brought you to this very place in order to accomplish this very purpose? Now in our study this morning, as we discussed that God rules over the kingdoms of men, we noted that there were kingdoms that arise and kingdoms that fall. And those kingdoms that God raises up are often brought about for a specific purpose, to accomplish the defeat of somebody else, as we read in Daniel chapter 2 and have studied in our Daniel class. So kingdoms arise and kingdoms fall, but God rules in the kingdoms of men and giveth the kingdom to whomsoever he will, Daniel said. But what we learn in this instance is, even on a personal level, how do you know, Esther, that God has not brought you to the position of being queen for this very purpose? That's interesting, isn't it? But as we look just a little bit further, Esther not only makes a commitment that she's going to do this. Esther bade them return to Mordecai with the answer. In verse 16, go gather together all the Jews that are present in Shushan, and fast ye for me, and neither eat nor drink 3 days, night or day. I also and my maidens will fast in like manner, and so will I go unto the king, which is not according to the law. And if I perish, I perish. That takes courage, doesn't it? I'm going to go before the king. I know it's not according to the law. The law says that if I go before the king, not having been sent for, I very well may die. But her attitude is, I very well may die anyway. So I'm going to go before the king, and if I perish, I perish. So she's going to beseech the king on behalf of her people, and if she perishes, she perishes. Now, interestingly enough, not only do we read about her commitment, Mordecai's insistence that she go, and her choice, but we also see her notable character. I'm going to go, and if I perish, then I'll perish. Now, what's her plan? Her plan is, I'm going to prepare a banquet, and I'm going to send an invitation to the king. And I'm also going to send an invitation to Haman. Interesting. I'm going to invite the king, and I'm going to invite Haman. Now, if you were Haman, what attitude would you have about being invited to the queen's banquet with only the king to accompany? Well, Haman was kind of puffed up about that. And so he was right proud of himself, if I may use some Kentucky grammar, right proud of himself. And if you'll notice in the second request, the king said unto Esther, verse 6, what is thy petition? And it shall be granted thee. What is thy request? Even to half of the kingdom it shall be performed. And Esther still really doesn't respond and tell the king what her petition is. But in the meantime, we find that Haman is increasingly distressed with Mordecai. And it is suggested by Haman's wife that perhaps it would be a good thing if he would build a gallows and just hang old Mordecai. That would get rid of Mordecai and, of course, all the rest of the Jews that would pursue when all the Jews were then slain. Well, now that seems like a good plan, doesn't it? But we find some problems. Haman's pride gets him into trouble. Back up, if you will, in the reading to verse 9. It says, then went Haman forth that day joyful and glad of heart. But when Haman saw Mordecai in the king's gate, he stood not up nor moved for him, he was filled with wrath against Mordecai. Nevertheless, Haman refrained himself and went home and sent and fetched his friends and Zeresh his wife. And Haman recounted unto them the glory of his riches and the multitude of his children and the things wherein the king had promoted him and how he had advanced him above the princes and servants of the king. And Haman said moreover, yea, Esther the queen did let no man come in with the king unto the banquet that she had prepared but myself. What an honor. How proud he was. Look at all the things I have. Look at all the things that the king has blessed me with. And even the queen has invited me and me alone to come to this feast with the king. You talk about feeling like he was walking in tall cotton. Again, some of you will understand that expression, David. He felt right proud of himself. He knew that the king had blessed him above anybody else. But his pride got him into trouble. And it's here that he plans this plot to hang Mordecai. But the king, I have kings up there. That should be king singular. In chapter 6, the king has trouble sleeping one night. And I find this interesting because he brings the chronicles of the kings to be read before him or to read, and he wants to know what will put him to sleep. So he wants to read the chronicles of the kings in an effort perhaps to get sleepy, and then he can sleep that night. But as he reads, he learns some things. In chapter 6, verse 1, it says, "On that night could not the king sleep, and he commanded to be brought, to bring the book of the records of the Chronicles, and they were read before the king, and it was found written that Mordecai had told Bigthana the and Teresh, two of the king's chamberlains, of those that kept the threshold, who had sought to lay hands on the king Ahasuerus. And the king said, 'What honor and dignity hath been bestowed on Mordecai for this?'" Now, Mordecai has done a great thing. He spared the king's life. Because of his revelation eventually to the king now lives. Now, the question is, what did we do for Mordecai? Well, then said the king's servants that ministered unto him, "There's nothing done for him." Didn't do anything. Didn't bestow any favor on him. Didn't recognize him in any way. Didn't give him anything. Nothing's been done for Mordecai. And the king says, "Who is in the court?" Now Haman was come into the outward court of the king's house to speak unto the king to hang Mordecai on the gallows that he had prepared for him. Now it's interesting to note that the king asked Haman, you know, Haman, if you wanted to honor somebody, now this is kind of a loose paraphrase, but if you really wanted to honor somebody, what would you do for them? And you can just see old Haman began to boast. He thought that the king was talking about him. If you wanted to honor somebody, Haman, what would you do? And in the latter part of verse 6, "Now Haman said in his heart, 'To whom would the king delight to do honor more than myself?'" You see, he's talking about me. Who would the king want to honor any more than me? "And Haman said unto the king, 'For the man whom the king delighteth to honor, let royal apparel be brought, which the king useth to wear, and the horse that the king rideth upon, and on the head of which a crown royal is set. And let the apparel and the horse be delivered to the hand of one of the king's most noble princes, that they may array the man therewith whom the king delighteth to honor, and cause him to ride on horseback through the street of the city, and proclaim before him, 'Thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delighteth to honor.'" Now old Haman thought, "I'm going to get to ride that horse. I'm going to have the king's apparel on, and I'm going to wear a crown, and there's going to go one before me proclaiming that I'm honored by the king." What a wonderful thing that would be. "And then the king said unto Haman, 'Make haste and take the apparel and the horse as thou hast said, and do even so to Mordecai.'" Now doesn't that get interesting? You want to honor somebody? Well, we're going to honor Mordecai. "And Haman, you talked about taking the prince of those of the king's most noble ones. Well, that would be you. And you're going to get to lead around Mordecai and proclaim that Mordecai is the man that the king wants to honor." Now, can you imagine the position that that puts Haman in? The fury that he must feel toward Mordecai. Now, Haman's wife, she was smarter than she looked, if I may use that expression. Haman recounted unto Zeresh, his wife, and all his friends everything that had befallen him. Then said his wise men and Zeresh his wife unto him, "If Mordecai, before whom thou hast begun to fall, be of the seed of the Jews, thou shalt not prevail against him, but shall surely fall before him." Now what are we reading? His own wife tells him, "You've messed up royally." His own wise men tell him, "You've messed up. If Mordecai be of the Jews and you've been influential in this decree to cause a decree to be made that all the Jews be slain, then if you go against Mordecai, if he's a Jew, you're in trouble." And so it was. As we read in chapter 7, verse 1, "So the king and Haman came to the banquet with Esther the queen. And the king said again unto Esther on the second day at the banquet of wine, 'What is thy petition, Queen Esther? And it shall be granted thee, and what is thy request, even unto half of the kingdom, it shall be performed.'" Now we read that in the previous chapter, in chapter 5. But here is the second banquet. And the king asked Esther, Now what is it that you really want? And she tells him, "If I found favor in thy sight," verse 3, "O king, and if it please the king, let my life be given me at my petition, and my people at my request. For we are sold, I and my people, to be destroyed, to be slain, and to perish. But if we had been sold for bondmen and bondwomen, I had held my peace altogether, although the adversary could not have compensated for the king's damage. Then spake the king Ahasuerus and said unto Esther the queen, Who is he, and where is he that doth presume in his heart to do so? Can you imagine old Haman over there? And it says, Esther said, An adversary and an enemy, even this wicked Haman. Now Haman is guest at the queen's request. He's the only guest besides the king. And now a finger of accusation is being pointed at him. He thought what was an occasion of great honor has now turned into a great occasion of dishonor. An occasion where he is accused of plotting to kill all of the Jews, which would include Esther, the queen. Now in verse 6, as it continues, Then Haman was afraid before the king and the queen. And the king arose in his wrath from the banquet of wine and went into the palace garden. And Haman stood up to make request for his life unto Esther the queen, for he saw that there was evil determined against him by the king. Now I want you to picture this scene. Here's Haman. Here's the king. Here's Esther. And Esther's pointing a finger at Haman. He's the fellow right there. And it's because of him that all the Jews are going to be slain. And it's because of him that I, Esther the queen, who am a Jew, is going to be slain. It's because of him. And the king in his anger just gets up and silently goes out into the palace garden. Haman knows he's in trouble. And he beseeches the queen. But if you'll notice at verse 8, Then the king returned out of the palace garden into the palace, or into the place rather of the banquet of wine. And Haman was fallen upon the couch whereon Esther was. Now picture that. The king comes in and here's Haman upon the couch where the queen is. Unacceptable, to say the least. Then said the king, Will he even force the queen before me in the house? You see the picture that the king has of what Haman is trying to do. Not a good one. Very unacceptable. As the word went out of the king's mouth, they covered Haman's face. Now picture that. What's about to happen to Haman? They're covering his face, getting him ready, that's right, for his execution. Then said Habona, one of the chamberlains that were before the king, Behold also the gallows 50 cubits high, which Haman hath made for Mordecai, who spake good for the king, standeth in the house of Haman. And the king said, Hang him. On it. Hang him. Now that's interesting, isn't it? The very gallows that Haman has made for Mordecai, now Haman is going to be hanged on that very gallows. Hang him. And, verse 10, So they hanged Haman on the gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai. Then was the king's wrath pacified. Now, the end of the story is not yet. When I was talking about these things with someone that had never read the Bible before, they were on the edge of the seat and said, What happens next? Isn't that exciting? But as we read this text, you have to ask the question, Well, what does happen next? Well, Haman is dead. And in the 8th chapter, in verses 1 and 2, we see that Mordecai is promoted. He's promoted to the very position that Haman had had, basically second in the king's command. And what about this decree that the king has made? That is, that all of the Jews were to be executed. Anyone who wants to partake of the money, go kill the Jews. Well, the decree essentially had been set in stone. But again, Esther risked her life. In verse 4 of the text, verse 4 of chapter 8, Then the king held out to Esther the golden scepter. So Esther arose and stood before the king. Now you see, that's good. Because Esther again has approached the king not having been sent for. And the king extends the scepter, which means Esther may approach unto the king. In verse 5 it says, She said, If it please the king, and I have found favor in his sight, and the things seem right before the king, and I be pleasing in his eyes, let it be written to reverse the letters devised by Haman. Well, we've got a problem with this. The problem is the decree has been written and it cannot be reversed. Now what about the Jews? What about Esther? Well, the king writes another decree. And the other decree that he writes is stated in verse 11, Wherein the king granted the Jews that were in every city to gather themselves together and to stand for their life, to destroy, to slay, and to cause to perish. I like the way that's stated. It could have just said to kill. But it says to destroy, to slay, and to cause to perish all the power of the people and province that would assault them, their little ones and women, and to take the spoil of them for a prey. Upon one day in all the provinces of King Ahasuerus, namely upon the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month Adar. That's interesting. The very same day that Haman had made arrangements upon which these Jews would be killed. This is the day that all the Jews can now defend themselves. And so we find at verses 5 and 6 that the Jews, 5 and 6 of chapter 9, that the Jews smote all their enemies with the stroke of the sword and with slaughter and destruction, and did what they would unto them that hated them. And in Shushan, the palace, the Jews slew and destroyed 500 men. Now you see that the Jews not only were given permission to defend themselves, but they were very victorious in defending themselves against this onslaught of their enemies. Now, we notice that in the book of Esther, the name of God is not mentioned one time. Not once. But you see God on every line. Now, just a few questions to consider. What if a woman named Esther was not taken by Mordecai? What if she wound up in the home of somebody else? What if Esther began by revealing her identity to the king other than when Mordecai told her to? And how did Mordecai happen to be the man of wisdom and intelligence involved in this whole setting? What made him so smart? What if he wasn't? And furthermore, how did Mordecai happen to even be alive at this time to be appointed prime minister? And how come the king had trouble sleeping one night? And how come he didn't ask for something else, but rather he asked for the chronicles of the kings and found out about Mordecai? And how did the king happen to hear about Mordecai saving his life to begin with? How come him to find that particular section in the Chronicles? And that's what he read. How did it happen that until now this good deed of Mordecai had been overlooked? What if it had been rewarded at the time that Mordecai did so? And how did the young Jewish orphan become queen over a world empire? Now we're not told about some of those things, but what if? What if she had never been known by anybody, but she became queen? Now, though the name of God is not found in the book, He's there. We see the providence of God on every line of every page. Now, in Esther chapter 4, verses 13 and 14, Mordecai asked, "And who knoweth whether thou art not come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" There's something to the words of Mordecai, aren't there? Mordecai believes in the providence of God. He knows these things can come to pass. In Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verse 1, "For all this I laid to my heart, even to explore all this, that the righteous and the wise and their works are in the hand of God." Do you believe it so? The book of Esther is a fascinating book. We just kind of scratched the surface skimming through it, but it's a fascinating book of the providence of God. You've listened patiently to our study. Hopefully it's been inspiring to you to believe some things about God, to believe that God can and does answer prayer, to believe that God is real and that He operates in the kingdoms of men. Maybe I'm talking to someone tonight who's not a Christian. Would it be your desire to express your faith tonight, having repented of your sins and be baptized into Christ for the remission of your sins? Maybe I'm talking to someone who is a child of God and your heart is not right. Just as Simon in the 8th chapter of the book of Acts, you would be instructed to repent and pray that the thought of your heart should be forgiven you. Perhaps it's something you need to confess before others, for others know about it. If you'd be willing to do that, and we can help you in any way to obey the gospel, make that known while together we stand and sing this song.
I hear.